Hello, and thank you very much for listening to this episode of the Billy Newman Photo Podcast. But this photograph is a really cool one from the Sierra Nevadas on the east side of the Sierra Nevada mountain ranges near Lone Pine, California, in the Alabama Hills. And we really liked camping in the Alabama Hills. This was actually, I think, right during Thanksgiving week during 2012. We had a blast being there. And camping there during the day was really cool. It was strange because at that time of year, the sun set still very early, like it was around 3 o'clock that the sun would set behind these mountains. But it would be pretty warm out. I think we remember getting sunburn out there, even at the first and second day of December when we were still there. It was pretty cool. We had a lot of fun being out there. And this is a really beautiful photograph of it that we took early that morning around sunrise.
You can see more of my work at billynewmanphoto.com. You can check out some of my photo books on Amazon. I think you can look up Billy Newman under the authors section there and see some of the photo books on film, on the desert, on surrealism, on camping. Some cool stuff over there. So 360 degree photo work over the last couple weeks, which has been really cool, and I've enjoyed it a lot. I really like doing the 360 stuff. I think back in June of 2018, we had done a bunch of podcasts about some of the 360 photography stuff that we were trying to do, some of the video stuff that we were doing with the GoPro Fusion at the time. And that was all really cool, and I liked that video a lot. This time I was working with a Ricoh Theta Z1, and I was going around to a few locations to try and get some photographs. Specifically, I think photographs a lot in this circumstance, not so many videos. But yeah, really interested in the 360 photography stuff that I was able to edit together and to capture during that time. So that was cool. But I went out to an area in central Oregon that was pretty cool and went up on like a hillside to, do some 360 work. And it's cool out there because you can really see the topography of how the Great Basin was formed at the, well, I guess like during the whole era of the Pleistocene, as it was for a long standing period of time, like a lake. It was just a big lake out there. And then as things started changing at the end of the Pleistocene, I think there was huge changes that ended the Great Basin stuff, that ended a lot of the megafauna that was in the area. And that kind of changed the topography of the landscape over the last 10,000 years to be something that's much more of the high desert, sagebrush, juniper tree, exposed rock landscape that we see today, and a lot less of the forested, temperate kind of mountain climate that we have through the Cascades and through part of Oregon. I'm sure it was always more dry given the rain shadow of the Cascade Mountains there, but I think that for a long period of time, as according to signs posted on my drives in areas where I go hiking sometimes. But, you know, like when you go up to some place and it says, you know, this area so such and such time ago had these animals in it. Well, you see like giant beavers, or you see like camels, or giant sloths, I guess they had in the area too. There's all sorts of stuff that they had that ended up being wiped out, I don't know, 100,000 years ago, 60,000 years ago to what? 10, 20, 10,000 years ago, something like that. There's a lot of changes that happened over the period of the Pleistocene, I guess during what they call the Quaternary period, a period of glaciations that the Earth has been involved in for the last 100,000 or 200, maybe million years. I'm not sure. It's the last couple hundred thousand years we've been going in these cycles of glaciations. We're in an ice age period. So we go into an ice age, like we have ice on the Earth right now. It'll be more ice at a point and then less ice at a point. More ice at a point, less ice at a point. I guess that's been going on for what they say, somewhere around like 200,000 years of these 30,000-year periods of glaciation to non-glaciation, where like I think we're like on the far end of the glacial maximum now. So we had the glacial maximum about like, what, 11,000, 12,000 years ago? Or is that right? No, it must have been like 15, 20,000 years ago that we were at the maximum. Then it started receding, I suppose. That's when we were able to... No. That doesn't make sense. We had, like, the land bridge, like the Beringia stuff, where people got over. That was probably 15 to 20,000. Sea levels were lower. They sailed at, like, 400 feet. They skirted along the coastlines. they came over through the land. So that was all pretty long ago. Well, anyway, at some point, like I was there, like I'm going to figure out, wait, let me remember. Let me think back to 15,000 years ago. Where was I? Yeah, I wasn't here. So I don't know what happened. But apparently there's been some recorded evidence that I was learning about. And I think it's like Monteverde down in Chile. And that's a location where I think they had carbon dated something to 15,000 years old, like human remains, human element remains. There's like a few locations here in Oregon where they I guess have evidence of the Clovis people. That's sort of around like the 11, 12, 13,000 year mark. And then there's other evidence of things that are, I don't know, within like the, it's tough. It's like anything from like 7,500 years to 15,000 years ago seems to all kind of be in flux of a date, because there's really not many perfect ways to date that. And if it's a cultural artifact, like an arrowhead or a pot shard or a scraper, there's some indication of how those things are going to be created, or how those artifacts are going to be created, and how those are going to remain. Like Folsom points or Clovis points are pretty distinct from each other, but they're not really culturally distinct from each other. So it could be like a variation of many different tribes and languages and peoples, all well unrelated to each other, but related with a similar vein of technology for a few thousand years of, you know, their tool use shape was kind of similar because they're all kind of from a similar descendancy. But I think when you get like a more than 100 miles away, your languages separate over like a couple generations. You're just going to speak different languages. But man, wild stuff. Anyway, so I don't remember where we even started with this, but I was out in Eastern Oregon exploring the Great Basin. I went up on a hillside in public land, and I was doing some 360 photography work with the Ricoh Theta Z1. That's what it is. And yeah, I was capturing some stuff on a hillside, really beautiful areas up there where those ridges kind of drop in and out. And so it's cool when you get like up to a higher elevation, you can kind of see the pockets of where these lakes and pools of water and had kind of sat and rested for what seems like. I think I was saying something about recording some 360 photographs up on some public land in the high desert in the Lake County Great Basin area of Eastern Oregon. Beautiful spot over there. I really enjoy it. And yeah, it was awesome to use the Ricoh Theta Z1 to be capturing some images up in that area. It's cool when you're at a higher elevation, and with the 360 camera, you can kind of, I don't know, it provides a little bit of a different perspective. It seems silly to say like wider, but when you kind of replay those images and you're able to sort of look around in context of what's to the left and to the right of you, you're kind of able to put together the context of the landscape a little better and a little faster than you could if you just had a series of individual photographs that had segments of the wider landscape captured in it. So it was cool at that higher elevation. You could kind of look down to areas that we had been hiking around earlier in the day through some of the ridges and troughs that would be over in that area. And you can look down, you know, it's like 500 feet down in elevation to what we thought was kind of the mountaintop pass. And then past that is another maybe 1,000 foot or a couple hundred foot drop in elevation as it goes down toward the lake basin area. So all that was pretty cool. And what was also cool about it is just sort of visualizing how populated that area had been in the past. I think, prior to the Western expansion of the United States, and as thousands of years had passed by, and this region of land in the Northwest, it had been populated, and that region specifically had been populated by nomadic tribes that had been able to travel and subsist off of the wild game that was there. I think a lot of like antelope and deer, and it looks like bighorn sheep by some of their, well, I don't know, some kind of sheep, but it looks like that from some of their pictographs and petroglyph information that they left there. And the dynamics of some of those populations of animals have changed in the time now, given like modern day. I don't know if we're gonna see a lot of sheep out there in Lake County, but there's one drawn on a rock out there, so they must have been trying to look for it. There's a lot of them in the Southwest as you move into the, I think, the Modoc tribes
from that's more of a 3,000 to 2,000. I don't know. It's probably about 3,000 to 600 years ago sort of a thing. But, or 100 years ago, really. I think that was like Captain Jack over there. Captain Jack's stronghold for the Modoc Indian Reservation area. That was like in the Indian Wars of the 1850s. So they lasted till then. But yeah, there's some information about some of the Paiute Indians. I think the northern Paiute that were in that area of southeastern Oregon, Nevada, then into Utah, Arizona, and New Mexico, if I kind of understood right. But I know there's some fluctuations in there and differences in timing and stuff. But yeah, it's all pretty cool stuff. It was really it was awesome to get out there. It was cool to get out and kind of walk around in some areas of some public land where we still have some access and still get out to try and do some photography stuff, even in this period where you're supposed to stay home and there's a lockdown. It was cool to kind of get out and try and do some exploring and some social distance conscious. I mean, hey, that's fine with me. I don't really have to be around a lot of people. It's better to do landscape wildlife photography work while you're sort of in some type of isolation. I'm sure like a lot of hunters are kind of considering something like that too. You know, hunters, fishermen, people that like hiking, or you know, a lot of those solo activities. It's cool that you know, this time sort of has provided a little bit of a reset for probably a lot of people out there to have a bit more time to invest in some of the things that they would want to. I suppose a lot of folks are probably stuck more in their local area, but it's a great time to get to invest in some things that seem more important to you. So that's what I've been trying to do. Hope you guys are doing well. Thanks a lot for listening to this episode of the Billy Newman Photo Podcast. You can check out more at billynewmanphoto.com. I've been doing a ton of updates over there. Is there a plane taking off? Sounds like there's a prop plane that's about to fly over my head. It's like that scene in North by Northwest where Cary Grant starts getting run down by that biplane. That'd be scary. So that's not in my future. You can check out more information at billynewmanphoto.com. You can go to billynewmanphoto.com/support if you want to help me out and participate in the value for value model that we're running this podcast with. If you receive some value out of some of the stuff that I was talking about, you're welcome to help me out and send some value my way through the portal at billynewmanphoto.com/support. You can also find more information there about Patreon and the way that I use it. If you're interested or feel more comfortable using Patreon, that's patreon.com/billynewmanphoto. Trying to do so. It's a few different things that I've been trying to check out. A lot of it around some of the stuff I was just talking about around the IPFS interplanetary file system stuff that I've been thinking is pretty fun. It's kind of cool checking out some of these different systems that people are creating, like DTube that I've talked about a few times. dsounds.audio is another one that I've been trying to publish too, which sort of has its ups and downs in some way. But then really on the other side of it, is some of the stuff that you can do just with the browser system. Or I think right now I'm using Sidereus. And then there's also the ability to, I guess, set it up from the command line or something like that. But Sidereus, the Orion by Sidereus, I think it's Orion by Sidereus, is seemingly to be the easiest way to get an IPFS node started on your computer, Windows, Mac, or Linux. Which is pretty cool. So I have mine going on a Windows 10 computer over here. I have it going on two Macintosh computers. And I'm still trying to figure out sort of how it works. I think a lot of stuff that you're putting up is going on to your local node and then it's being served out from there. But I was testing it out the other day just with Marina. And we like uploaded a small picture and got the hash link for it and then opened it in the browser on her computer, and it pulled up the image fine. It pulled up like an ebook thing that I put up there too. So it's pretty cool that you can find it, that you can, I guess, even have that built out, but really interesting how it works. So I'm trying to, I guess, use that a little bit more and put up a bunch of the videos and stuff that I have up there in a way where I can use it in the long term. You know, my understanding of it is that it's sort of persistent on the internet and that it'll be there distributed for a long time if it gets distributed properly before I think like if it gets off my note or something like that, but I'm not even sure if that really breaks it or not. I'm not sure yet, but I'm trying to figure it out. Pretty exciting stuff though, figuring out the distributed web. The other part of it I'm trying to figure out is how to do website publishing onto the distributed web. And I think there's a few tools that are going to be in development probably right now. They're supposed to be released maybe closer toward the end of 2019. But one that I'm checking out, well, there's two of them. There's the Pico CMS, which has been used, I think, on Linux for a long time to make standalone HTML sort of CMS-based or HTML CSS websites through a CMS. Well, that's a lot of letters. But there's this other one, though, that is the one that I mean to talk about, which is called Publi, that I think is still in beta right now. It's a piece of software that runs, again, on Mac, Linux, and Windows. I have it on my, I think, on two Macs right now that I've been trying it out on. But there's a few different themes. It's a standalone program that runs on the computer, and then you can select a theme, and then you can go through and make modifications to that theme and add your content into it, like pictures and whatever your posts are that you want to have add to it. And then you can preview it, and it's just a standalone file architecture that it's building like on the computer where it's writing out the code and the CSS file that it's supposed to reference to. So it's working pretty well. It's kind of cool. I'm trying to check it out a little bit and sort of see what kind of little site I could build with it. But the reason that I say all that is because standalone websites, as opposed to the things that are sort of set up more like a database like WordPress that I've got going on, I think that this, well, maybe you could do it with WordPress too. I'm not really totally sure about it. But from what I understand, though, the standalone, just sort of flat HTML website is pretty easy to put up onto this distributed web that I keep talking about. So you can take that standalone file that contains the text and photos and code and stuff for your website, put it up onto your distributed web IPFS node, and then take that hash link and then open that in any browser, and then that'll open up whatever website content you had there, and it'll show it in the browser. It's kind of a cool idea. There's a couple limitations to it, I guess, on like updating the website and how that works with the hash. I guess the hash remains static related to exactly the information that was in the file when the hash was made. And if any data in that file has changed, a new hash would be created. And so each hash that exists would be specific to a certain time that site was uploaded and published, I guess. So there's some way to get around that, I guess, by using another string of numbers or letters, the IPNS, which is supposed to kind of correct some of the network stuff around using the file system that we've been talking about a little bit. But it's kind of cool. It's just sort of some of the development tool stuff that I've been thinking about. But what I'm going to try and do is put together sort of a run through of a bunch of photos, maybe like a little basic portfolio thing that I could try and put together. Also, similarly, it's a ready-to-go site, so if it works well enough, I might try and append it to the site that I'm working, you know, like my WordPress site, as sort of a piece that I sort of do maybe some kind of side project with. Maybe it'll be like a subdomain that I set up under billynewmanphoto.com as the subheading, so I can set up, you know, some side project. I've seen people put like their photo portfolios up like that, which I could do something like that, or I could do, I don't know, just some other kind of information project altogether. Maybe that'd be kind of cool to do. I'm sure WordPress and everything I have kind of going there is more than adequate to put together whatever tools I need to display on my website, but I'm trying to think of something kind of cool to do with this CMS program that I've been checking out. So it's kind of interesting stuff. I like getting into that a bit. I've been adding a few different things to my website too, the BillyNewmanPhoto.com website, where I haven't really paid as much attention in the past to SEO and the schemes around SEO that you're supposed to try and fill in when you're putting up content on the site. So there's like meta tags, descriptions and alt tags, title tags. I guess a lot of those focus keywords or focus key phrases. I've never really put much of that stuff in the past, so I'm trying to go back through a lot of those photos and a lot of the different pages and content and add in the like links that I would be looking for, or like sitemap links, or the different pieces sort of on the website that would help me kind of link around and make it sort of a more full functioning interconnected website. That's something that I'm kind of trying to go for, and really I want to try and put up a lot more onto that website in a way that is more functional and sort of more fun for me. Speaking of fun, here's another warm pat to throw in there. But I'm trying to make my website a little bit more fun to use. and a little bit more fun for like people to go see and check out. So it's kind of like a limited amount of content that's up there right now. Man, enough of me playing piano. I should learn some chords or something if I'm going to do that. But as it goes on my website, there's like a few of the photos that I have there that are displayed well enough, but I really want to up that so that the photo display is really in its most interesting and like highest level that I could probably get it to. And I think we can get pretty close to getting like a handful of different portfolios that sort of are a couple different selections and kind of showing stuff a little better than it shows right now. And I also want to try and put up some more like business stuff too, like shops and products that are for sale and different links out to content locations where things are a little bit more thoroughly put together. That's sort of something I'm trying to hope for. But that's all separate from the distributed web stuff. That's all kind of more for fun, where it seems like only like a couple thousand people are using and publishing stuff to the distributed web sites right now. Like I've been on DTube a bunch of the day, and I've just been trying to like upload a bunch of the videos that I've had over on YouTube. So I'm just trying to cross post a bunch of those to DTube and see how it's working. And it's interesting to try out. I really can't tell if anybody's seeing it because I don't think there's a view counter really. It's showing information like someone's viewing it, or maybe sometimes it gets a comment or some interactivity. So that's probably some proof, but just as like a regular view goes, I don't really see any information around it there. But I'm trying to look at like all the videos that are being uploaded. You can just kind of go to a feed and it says new, you know, it's all the videos that have been uploaded in the last 3 hours, and you can just see a list of them. So like on YouTube, it'd just be like a ridiculous flood of stuff coming in. I think like every minute they get more videos than you can watch in a year. You know, there's just some ludicrous stat like that. On this one, you just see like, oh, the last hour, there's been like 4 of my videos and 3 videos from somebody else and a few videos from some other people. So it's still like real bare bones, kind of early days, it seems like. But it's kind of fun trying to put up some videos and try and just check out the service, see how it works. And I'm also trying to figure out a little bit more of like how it's different than the... I just don't understand it very well. I don't understand how like DTube works as a decentralized location. It seems like you log in, but you log in with like this cryptographic key that they don't have like at a centralized location. And I just don't understand that. Like what? Like it's just weird. How does that work? How is it like not on a server somewhere? All these videos. So I put up probably like 30 videos or something on this this DTube page for my account Billy Newman, and yeah, it's going interestingly so far, but I'm going to try and get a bunch of those collected so that I can go around and put a bunch of those links out in some places too, maybe on my website or online in some social places or something like that too, so I can get the word out about it. But that's a trick right now with it too, is that there's really no search engine for the distributed web, or there's no directory system within the distributed web to sort of see what's interesting there. So, or maybe there is and I haven't found it yet, but it really seems like you have to go to somewhere like Reddit or some forum that's talking about it, somewhere just on the regular internet where someone's already published a set of links to take you over to these distributed web locations. So it's kind of interesting. Thanks a lot for checking out this episode of the Billy Newman Photo Podcast. Hope you guys check out some stuff on billynewmanphoto.com. A few new things up there, some stuff on the homepage, some good links to other outbound sources, some links to books, some links to some podcasts, links to some blog posts, all pretty cool. But yeah, check it out at billynewmanphoto.com. Thanks a lot for listening to this episode of the podcast. Talk to you next time.